The Dog Point Podcast.
Episode 10.
Hi guys, welcome to episode 10 of the Dog Point Podcast. Today is a bit of a special episode as we have a guest here. We have Jeremy from Hakwai K9 out of Toronto, Canada.
Hey guys, what's up? What's up, what's up?
And he's here on vacation and some work.
Yeah, doing some work. I brought a French bulldog down for Fiona and Bungie. And one time I kind of paired it with just digging into more of the dog culture in Trinidad and Tobago. Before I left, I wasn't heavily involved so much with the dog culture. I was always into dogs, but this trip I really kind of dove in under Alan Mitchell.
Right.
And meeting yourself.
Okay. So we've done some work.
Yeah.
The last 2 weeks. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this whole movement that is plaguing us all.
Mm-hmm.
With the force-free training.
The force-free guys.
Not all of it bad, but a lot of it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And if we as, and I consider myself a balance trainer.
Right.
If we don't talk about it, and if we don't set the record straight on a few things, then we are the ones that are going to lose out.
I definitely agree.
Because the force-free ideology is sounding really good. It pulls on heartstrings, and therefore politicians love it, which is the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because politicians don't care about substance. Once something looks like it could be popular, they jump on it.
Correct.
With no regard of consequences.
Yeah.
And that's what's been happening in Europe.
Mm-hmm. I agree. For instance, the bully / pit bull ban that just started in the UK. Mm-hmm. That was a big scene. And it kind of spiraled out of control based on yes, there was an attack. That was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back. But I think the biggest problem, as you rightfully said, is, and I think it's more of an ignorance thing, is we are focused a lot, and everyone is focused a lot on the type of training, whether it's balance training or force-free training, that kind of stuff, instead of good quality dog ownership. So you have a lot of shit owners, right? And they're giving breeds a bad name because pretty much your Rottweiler guy, pretty much there will be no more Rottweilers in the UK as well. Anything that will bite. So eventually a Pompek gonna be out of the scenes because it could be dangerous. You know, not putting any blame at all whatsoever on the owners/handlers.
Yeah, and the only place that I've seen that is really progressive in that sense is Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
In Calgary, they're not going after the dogs or any specific breed. They're straight after the owner.
Which
you're responsible for the actions of your dog. If your dog bites somebody he wasn't supposed to, you go to jail.
Correct.
That's it. That's how it should be.
Yeah, correct.
That's how it should be all over the world. And they're going all over the world lecturing on it.
Yes.
And showing people, hey, this has worked.
Yeah.
And here's why it has worked.
And breed-specific legislation does not work.
It cannot. Because the same asshole mentality that some people have, the only dogs, they just switch breed.
Correct.
Right? In Italy, they started banning pit bulls, and shortly after, they had 17 breed bans.
Yeah.
And has anything changed? No. The same amount of people are still dying every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It has shown not to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I agree.
And they did something similar in our region, in Antigua.
Yeah.
Where they do pretty much the same. They took the Calgary Act and modified it for their culture and their country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also successful with it.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is a lack of education in terms of owners. Because there is, and you know, the problem is the internet is a pro and a con. Because as a new dog owner, and I get it, as a new dog owner, there's so much information. You're just trying to do right by the dog. So most times you're just trying to do right by the dog. Because these people, they love their dogs, right? And they're trying to do right by the dog, but there's so much conflicting information.
Yeah.
You know? And then even when it comes to choosing a trainer, there's a lot of conflicting information because one trainer is going to say this, the next trainer is going to say that. And you know what? I will say it kind of boils down to the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. And that is a point I was coming to, right? What you hear more and more is people coming to trainers and saying, look, my dog has X problem. I went to 3 trainers.
Yeah.
And I got 0 results.
Correct.
Nothing has changed. Right? The dog is doing the same thing. He's a little older, so it's worse now. And I spent thousands of dollars and I got nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go behind, who were those trainers?
All force free.
All force free.
Correct. All positive reinforcement, I should say.
Well, I want to believe that we all use positive reinforcement 90-something percent of the time.
Well, I agree, and that's
right?
We teach
using positive reinforcement. Correct. But there comes a time
when you have where to
you
say
have to
no.
Say, hey, no.
Exactly.
That's not how it works. There is no creature on this planet that goes through life force-free.
Yes.
From the most complex mammal down to the single-cell organisms. They all move away from discomfort and towards comfort.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That is how everything that lives learns.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that you teach your dog with zero pressure and zero stress and zero corrections and don't even say no, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, you're so cruel if you say no.
And boundaries.
And no boundaries. The dog can do whatever and then if you don't like it, you manage the environment.
Yeah. We call
and
that,
take away all the stimuli from the dog so that he doesn't do it.
Yes.
Right? And then the dog ends up never being outside, never being in an open field, being able to run and let it rip because you have a good recall. Never, you know, goes for a walk somewhere because, oh my God, there could be some other dog barking at him and my dog is reactive, so I can't go there. Rather than teaching your dog, hey, no.
Yeah.
Walk with me.
I think, you know what, it's up to us as trainers to promote that lifestyle. In terms of, I always tell people, a dog without training is a liability
to
you and your family. But when you experience a trained dog, whether it's a small dog, a big dog, a protection dog, a pet, it is now an asset to your family. You really get to enjoy the dog. I have clients, somebody just called me today, right? Jeremy, I love my dog so much, but I hate my dog so much right now, right? Because it's hard, but that's what you get for not training a dog. But again, it goes back to it. The problem with it, and I will tell you this too, and I was speaking to somebody about that just yesterday. The same way the force-free people are marketing themselves and the same way they are out there and pushing and making content because content is what is going to educate people,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the same way we on our side need to put that content out there to market, right?
Show your work.
Show that the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah.
Show me, and I always tell people this, show me a force-free person, take a dog that has a bite history, right? Let's take dogs, because we've done it. If any of you guys check my Instagram, HakwaiK9 on Instagram, right? Check it out. We've done dogs that bite history. Bit up a kid, bit up a dog, last chance to be put down, before they're being put down. The first things first, the other trainers that tried to fix the dog, force free, couldn't work, right? So now this dog is going to die. It's going to die, right? Unless you step in now with and let the dog know, hey, you can't, there's certain things you can't do and certain things you can't do, right? For instance, like mauling someone, there's something you can't do,
yeah.
right? Take somebody who's force free. I could put money on the table right now, put money. I could put money on the table. We should all just put money on the table. And it has been done before.
It was not going to say. It has been done. There is a trainer in UK.
Correct.
£22,000.
I'll put that money on the table right now too.
Get that dog not to go after a herd of sheep out in the open.
Let's make it simple. Let's make it more simple. Let's
and nobody stepped up. Correct. Obsidian Canine.
Yeah.
Had put out a challenge.
Let's make it easier than that. Let's take a dog on leash. On leash. You have full leash, right? Give the dog any treat you want. Any treat you want. Any treat. But let's take a dog aggressive dog, right? Stand on the street and walk a dog in front of him. And I want to see you get that dog to stop the behavior by using a treat. And you know what? The funny thing about the positive only people is they don't realize that it's actually, you are actually rewarding the behavior the moment you try to give a dog a treat at that instant when they were displaying that negative behavior.
Yeah.
You just can't just be a yes
man all
day long.
You redirect the dog and then you reward him for redirecting. There is something called auditory exclusion. Mm-hmm. If a dogs don't multitask. So if a dog gets super focused on something, their brain literally doesn't hear you. They block you out. Right? And I got to experience that in a good way with my late dog Ninja, my German Shepherd. We did a demo for the Hunters Association.
Mm-hmm.
And Ninja is a dog that he didn't care whether there's two people watching the demo or, like in that case, in Mayaro, you had 2,000 people surrounding a football field. There's a PA system. There's music playing. There's strollers with children. There's children screaming and running. There's dogs barking everywhere, howling because it's a hunter's dog show. And we did an obedience demo.
Yeah.
And he blocked all of that out. And all he could see is us, me and 5 feet around us. Right. That is the only thing he was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
He blocked out everything. His brain just discerned that.
Yeah.
And the same happens when a dog is reactive. He's so focused on that dog because most of the reactivity stems out of fear.
Fear and trauma.
Right?
Right.
So either he got attacked before and he gets overly defensive to prevent it from happening again.
Correct.
Right? Or he is just afraid of what might happen.
Yeah.
And so the dog is so focused and in survival mode at that point that whatever you say to try and redirect this dog, no amount of food, no amount of talking to him is going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to physically get through to the dog for him to look away from that dog and look at you. It's like, what?
Yeah. But then what happens when that dog has no food drive?
Yeah.
Right? So what happens with positive only when...
Then you say pretty please.
Right? Pretty please. Right? What happens when that dog has no food drive? What do you do then?
Pray.
Right? And that's the problem. That's the problem with...
You can't always manage the environment, right?
No, but you call that accommodating the dog.
Yeah. But they have to realize that there is competing motivators out there.
Correct.
So what works home in your household,
in your comfort zone,
with the neighbor walking their dog at 100 feet away is not the same as you being in the road and a dog on a flexi line is running up on your dog.
Yeah.
With the lady screaming, "That's okay, he's friendly.
He's friendly. He's friendly."
Everybody knows. Yeah. How is it that every trainer I talk to finishes that sentence for me?
Can our dog say hi? Can our dog say hi?
Right?
Your dog is frothing at the mouth, bro. No. Your dog is frothing.
And so, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. And it's the wrong perception of what socialization means too. You know, dog owners believe that socializing the dog means that everybody needs to pet their dog and that their dog needs to play with every dog it encounters.
We don't allow that at all with my clients.
No. Yeah. What socialization means, and I've done videos on this free on my social media.
Yeah.
Socialization means that the dog has to be functioning in the presence of other people and other dogs and other stimuli.
I like that definition.
That is what socialization is, right?
Yeah.
The dog is environmentally neutral and concentrates what he's doing with you.
Yeah. And actually, we worked that with Force.
Yes.
The last thing we did in protection yesterday was working Force in just becoming neutral,
right.
Especially after that kind of stimulation.
Yes.
You know, And yeah, I think people don't, the biggest thing that I try to tell my clients too is master the art of doing nothing. You know, sometimes you just have to master the art of doing nothing. Just a simple sit, stay.
Yeah.
Or downstay and just.
I tell my clients, when you go to a park, it is not to meet dogs.
Yeah.
Sit on a bench, have the dog in a down.
Yeah.
And just hang out for half an hour.
Yeah.
Let the dog take it in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they just need time to lie down and digest what's happening.
Yeah.
So there's these people exercising there. There's this stray dog running around there. There's this person on a bicycle. There's some children playing.
Yeah.
And nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens to them.
Yeah.
And the more often they make that experience, the more normal it becomes to see all of this.
I agree.
That is socialization.
Yeah.
And then when your dog is fine with this particular park, then you go to another venue and another mm-hmm. venue and another venue. And by the time you reach venue number 10 or 15,
yeah,
you can take your dog anywhere and he just doesn't care.
I think a big one that most owners overlook, and this might be, I would say, the beginning of foundation in training for any dog, right, is crate training. I think that's but the most underlooked. Cruel. The most underlooked. Like, for instance, before I came here, that's why I arrived so late. We had to go to pick up one of the golden retrievers from my friend's estate. Big up JB Chocolates. We ate your chocolates yesterday. Big it up.
Tastes really nice. Tastes really nice.
But we had to take the dog from... He went to get neutered. Now, as we're on that topic, I'm an advocate for not neutering dogs until a certain age. I noticed the scrotum looking a little swollen maybe 2 days ago. And I realized it was starting to retain a little fluid. So I was like, let's go get this checked out. And so said, so done. A little cancer was there. We caught it early. We clipped him. He was about 8 years old. So he lived to fight another day.
I had that happening with a 3-year-old Doberman.
Yeah.
And he lived to
exactly
past
right?
11 after.
So I believe in neutering at the right time. Right? So we'll touch on that after. But while we're still on the crate training subject, if this dog wasn't crate trained, right? And it went to the vet now you're having this dog freaking out by the vet, right? Because what is the vet supposed to do after the dog is starting to come to from anesthesia? We should just all chill out here outside with you because you're afraid of the crate. The vet has no time for that. And it's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, right? So I don't think a lot of people realize how important and how much of a foundation for your dog crate training is. Even going back to the same thing you were talking about in terms of when we put all the dogs in all these situations and this stimulation, but as soon as you get home, the best thing to do would be, obviously, if you work the dog, so he's tired, he's fed, put him in his crate, let him decompress. That is the place to decompress. If he's outside, he's still not decompressing because people don't realize there's still stim inside the house.
Yes.
Right? So we need to put them away and help them to literally decompress in their crate. Another thing about that is education, we need to educate people about this. The crate should never be used for punishment. Right?
Yeah. Dogs don't understand timeout.
No. But again, that's actually how where there's some dilemmas in that force free where it starts falling apart, right? When you start putting the dog in the crate as a timeout or giving a dog a timeout, dogs don't understand that shit, right? So now you're punishing the dog in the crate. So obviously I'm not gonna like it, right? But if we develop the crate to be your bedroom, that's your space in the house,
your safe space,
exactly. Now the dog loves the crate. So now when you put him in a situation where, hey, we have to go in this crate. For instance, when I moved to Toronto from Trinidad, my dog had to go in the crate for hours, right? That dog needed to be in the crate 5 hours before he traveled. The trip is 6 hours, right? So we're already on 11 hours. And then when you get there, you still have to clear customs. That's maybe another 3-4 hours, right? That's a long time. If your dog is not crate trained, I think that could mentally break your dog, you know?
Yeah, I always say crate train your puppy. It also helps with potty training because you bring structure to it and routine in terms of time, as well as less distraction in the house, because when you can't supervise your dog, it's in the crate. And it also teaches the dog that it's okay to be alone at times.
Yes.
How many dogs
yes.
or how many customers have approached you with the problem of separation anxiety?
Yeah.
Anxiety.
That is
the biggest thing.
Exactly. We have made these dogs that bad. And I've had some breeds like the Alaskan Malamute. That dog would rip through anything. It does not matter what you put that dog in. So that owner would need a babysitter if they needed to even go to the grocery. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing stopping that dog. Like, it would rip apart a wire crate. It's destroying the metal crate. And then it taught itself how to open the door and just walk around the condo. Just looking for a human to spend time with. It's not aggressive or anything. It just can't be alone.
Yeah.
You know?
And that is, you know,
again,
created
humans.
By humans.
Humans.
Yeah,
right?
It's created by humans. But then you have countries that banned everything under the sun.
Yeah.
In Switzerland, you can't have the dog in a crate.
Yeah.
So if you're a breeder in Switzerland,
yeah,
how you ship a dog?
Pressure.
How do you ship a dog? How you transport this dog to the airport and then
in
put it on a plane?
In your arms.
Yeah. That's, so if I'm breeding Bernese Mountain Dogs, well, I'm sitting on a plane with this thing
real
on my
strong.
Lap, taking it to another country in my lap because Switzerland has banned crates.
Switzerland, see you later, guys. No one is going to buy dogs from you, right?
And nobody wants to live there.
Right? I understand. It's
insane.
It's, yeah.
And it's again,
rough.
That's what I was alluding to with politicians, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just, dogs locked up in a tiny crate. Oh, that is cruel. It appeals to them.
No.
But they don't think it through, right? What does it mean?
So now,
how is it used correctly?
At the same time, again, and that's why I'm so hell-bent on in Toronto and in Trinidad, because we protested against the BSL, right? And they eventually amended it, right? But I will say, I think we should push and focus a lot more on legislation towards dog ownership, right? Where you have to have, I think you should have a license to own a certain type of breed, right? It shouldn't be super hard to get it, but you should show proficiency in minimum handling, right? Where you have to do a class or some shit. Maybe a minimum of 4 sessions, 5 sessions, something like that.
The problem is the only thing you can test for really in that scenario is your theoretical knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you need a license to have a dog,
right?
How do you show that you can handle a dog if you can't have it? So it's the chicken and the egg thing, right?
I mean, so that way, think about it. We have a lot of dogs in the shelters. We could start doing something with that in terms of
having... A shelter can also have one dog that is for that purpose. So different people come in and handle the dog.
Correct. And not only that, if we designate, let's just say we designate certain dog trainers, those dog trainers themselves would have dogs specifically for the purpose of teaching handling. Right? Specifically for the purpose of, you have a small dog, a big dog, right? But I think that might be the best direction versus us just playing it by ear, because it's clear that this isn't going anywhere good anytime soon. And it's spiraling worse and worse now, because I think since the whole lockdown, since the whole COVID scene, a lot of people have been getting dogs, right? A lot more people have been getting into the dog culture instead, right? And now it's getting bad because you have an influx of people who got dogs who are now turning around 2-3 years old, now maturing and have no training, right? No foundation, nothing. And keep in mind, all these people, especially around COVID, there was a lot of information and misinformation online. So now you're like, okay, how do I choose this? And I mean, I feel it for those people. I feel it for those people because it's so hard. Like if let's just say I didn't know you and I wasn't a dog trainer. The first thing I'm going to do now is I'm going to go on Google or I'm going to go on YouTube or TikTok and say, okay, I'm typing in how to train a dog, right? And again, back to content creation. Who's the people who pushing that first? The force free.
Yeah.
So we can't blame, as the balance people, we can't blame some people for being ignorant, because we are not taking any time to put it out there. Now, I know it's hard. I know it's hard. But
tell me about
Yeah, you're freaking doing it, right?
Tell me about
here
it.
Right now.
We have,
right?
We have hundreds of free videos.
Yeah.
On all major social media platforms, you know, it's not easy to keep up.
No, it isn't. Without.
It's an insane amount of work.
But it you could see, I'm sure you could see the value in how much you're educating people. Right, I'm sure you could see that, because like even I could tell you guys, even before I met you through Alan, I was seeing some of your videos. Even in Toronto, I was seeing stuff from you guys, and I would share some of that to my clients, because I mean I fell in that category too, where I'm doing some content, but I'm not. Sometimes I might be as in depth as you guys, and I might be like, you know what, this guy said it the best, right? Just look at his video, you'll understand, right? So yeah, but I mean,
we're trying to put out a mixture of actually showing the work,
yeah,
as well as, you know, explaining it.
Yes.
So that anybody who now gets to having a dog can get some information to get started, from potty training, what to do with your puppy, how to create engagement.
Yeah.
So like dog is actually wanting to work with you later.
Yeah.
And motivation, you know, allow puppies to be puppies. And
yes.
You don't jump into the sit down and heal with a little puppy.
Going through the process.
You know, you just create a form of communication with the puppy first, so that when you start training, it gets so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, and you reward all the behaviors that you like. So if the dog sits, or if the dog lies down or comes to you, there's no command attached to it. It's like, yeah, here, take a treat.
Yeah,
I like what you're doing.
Yeah, feedback.
And so the dog understands that, okay, I want to do this more often because he seems to like it. And I get food. And so, you know, you get the dog already into it, and then it's just to attach a name to it, which then becomes the command.
Correct.
You know, and then you have the basics, and you have a dog that is focusing on you, that is interested in working with you, and that is half the bet right there.
I think another big issue is people, a lot of people, I would say most people, they choose a breed based on, like, they just saw it and they like it. You know? Way boy, I like this Kangal, but I live in a one-bedroom apartment and I don't have the time. You know? A lot of people don't.
And when
don't
the dog curls up, it takes up the whole, all of the king-size bed.
I know, right? Now, don't get me wrong. I used to live in a one-bedroom downtown in Toronto. And we had 6 dogs, right? I shouldn't be saying that, but we did. Right? But we had a lot of dogs there. Big dogs, small dogs, right? So it could be done, right? And and my wife was working, I was working too, right? But we put any time because we love dogs like that, right? But my main point is a lot of people don't, and that's one thing I could fault people for in this instance. Training is one thing. Training is one thing. I could understand the information that could mislead you in training.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of you researching a breed and understanding a breed, nah. There's just so much information out there. You can't tell me that you didn't go at least once.
5 or 10 minutes on Google
can tell you
a lot.
Right? You can't tell me.
So I always tell people, so people research for half an hour which handbag they're going to buy next on Amazon.
Yeah, or the cell phone.
Right? Or what is the latest cell phone? Or should I get an iPhone? Or should I get an Android?
Yeah, a new car.
And when it comes to dogs, just,
yeah.
Oh, this is so cute. I want one. And have no idea as to what this breed comes with. What characteristics does the breed come with? You know,
what health
is it suitable for my lifestyle?
Yes. What health issues does the breed come with as well?
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes you might be getting into a breed that it might be fancy, it might be a sexy breed, but you don't know you're going to be paying a shit ton of money on health bills. Or like this fad in Trinidad with people owning huskies, right?
Yeah.
Like for the life of me.
Plus 32 at 90% humidity, but
you
want a husky.
And then on top of that, you want to know, well, why is he acting like that? Because he was meant to run 100 friggin' miles a day, right? In the cold, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, you know what? We'll put him in the AC. He's inside. You do right by him by giving him a little cool. But this dog was meant for work. He was meant to run and pull shit,
yeah.
Right? So when that is not fulfilled, I must give trouble.
They get miserable.
Cesar Millan said it the best. A working dog, or a dog specifically bred, every dog was specifically bred for something, right? That they are literally, it's like a person with a doctorate in their field that is unemployed, right? And I think that's the best way to describe it. You have a doctorate, but you there's no work for you, right? And you're getting frustrated. And I think that's the best way to describe a working dog, how they feel.
People get a little terrier, you know, like a little Jack
Russell.
Like
a Jack Russell, yeah.
And then wonder why the dog is constantly digging up in electrical wires or digging up in between plants and digs up the yard.
Or like border collies. You ever get these dogs like, it's such a cute dog.
Once the herd up around the cars.
Right? Or the new trend, I blame John Wick for that one, right? But the new trend of Malinois out here, man, I can't tell you how much people are getting Mals, and then they're like, oh, well, they can't handle it.
Yeah, but 9 months, it's like, it's too much dog for me. Yeah. So then at that point, what do you do?
And then, you know, it's not fair to the dog. Now the dog has to be rehomed. Definitely has to be rehomed. That's one. So now the dog has bonded with you. It's 9 months and has to be rehomed. There's not much people that will be willing to take a 9-month-old dog, even though it's still a puppy.
I was called to a case where a guy thought it was a good idea to give his 72-year-old mother a Malinois as a guard dog for the yard.
Her plant, you know, them old people like their plants. Them plants get mashed up.
Forget plants. When I got there, she said, well, the dog is out in the back there. That's okay. Can you call him? Oh, no, I'm not going out there. It's her dog, right?
Yeah.
She's 72. The dog has thrown her over 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
She broke her hip on one of those occasions. Gosh. And the dog is in the back there, totally hyped up. And he hates anybody that doesn't live in the house.
Yeah.
You can't approach your dog.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you need to rehome this dog you can't have this dog.
No.
There's no way that will end well, right? Yeah. And, you know, she got upset when I said that.
Really?
Yeah, because it was a gift from her son.
Oh, you see? So.
Yeah, so I said, so.
When she get bite up, well, we know what's the scene.
You know, the husband hates the dog because he's accustomed reading a book on the back porch, which he can no longer
and
do.
And now he can't enjoy. Now you're hostage in your own house. He worked
all his life and to retire, you know, paid off for the house, wants to enjoy the property and sit in the back that he created to read a book on an afternoon and can't.
A hostage.
And can't because he's held hostage by a Malinois.
Yeah.
Right? Who then runs off with the book. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's
I really don't think people put a lot of effort into researching the breed. And then while we're on that topic, let's just say, okay, we went through the steps of finding a good breed. We know we like this breed. Another big thing, a big problem people have, and I think it's a problem all over the world, is backyard breeders, in terms of people who are just breeding not only for the money, but just breeding poorly bred dogs, right? So now you have unstable dogs, or you might have dogs with just poor health, right? So you know this is the breed that you wanted. Let's just say, for instance, the Doberman, right? You know this is the breed you want. You did your research. You're willing to put in the work. You're willing to put in the time. You buy this dog thinking that, you know, it seems like it looks good. Seems like it looks healthy. And then you get stuck with this friggin' dog that you are spending money. You're bonded with this dog already now. You're bonded with the dog. And now you're raking, trying to find money to keep this dog healthy. It has allergies. It has this. It has that. And now you're just forking out money on this dog now.
Then the dog gets wobbler syndrome.
Yeah. And then the dog eventually dies. And, you know, like, it's a hard thing, right? So I think, you know, for people out there, I will always say it. Do your research as well on getting a good breeder, right? It does it doesn't necessarily need to be a paper dog, right? You know, like some people are into just strictly registered dogs. It doesn't necessarily need to mean that dog needs to be registered. But at least for the minimum.
At least
health testing, veterinary testing. And that's another thing. Another big pointer for you guys, if you're choosing a breeder, ask to see the parents. Ask the cargo. If you ask a breeder to see the parents and the parents not on site or blah, blah, blah. Now, some people, like, they get their studs from away, or they might import sperm to do a year.
Right.
But for the least, the mother, for the least, right?
But you know, even that is not a guarantee.
No.
I've seen it here in Trinidad. No.
Yeah. Because then you have brokers.
Somebody sold out a whole litter.
Yeah.
And then bought a 5-week-old litter.
Yeah.
And put it under the same female because she was still lactating.
Right.
And then told people she's the mother.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Came from a completely different set of parents. When you, the customer, when you come in, you don't know any better.
Yeah, you don't know. You especially if you're a new dog owner.
You see the puppies nursing.
Yeah, you're going to be like, wow. Right? And then, you know, some people ask, why are good dogs so expensive? Because when the amount of work that you put in.
Oh, yeah, and the amount of testing and,
and
proofing and
getting
good stock to begin with.
Yeah,
you know,
big up Pipsqueak Mansion. Pipsqueak Mansion. You guys can check it out on Instagram as well too. That's my.
While we're on the subject, you know, being a Rottweiler man,
right?
You have worked with Force, and you have noted how stable he is.
Very stable,
despite his aggression and despite his
I mean, we were full on in training,
right?
You know, usually, and that was only like I believe his fourth session.
Big up One Head One Guard Kennels.
Yeah.
For breeding the specimen.
Yeah. Then he was
right.
Very
and,
good
and
specimen.
Very consistent in the whole litter, right?
Yeah.
So all the males.
Tell that breeder, message me. I'm looking for a Rottweiler right now, guys. I am in the market. Right? So if you want a good trainer to wake your dog, send them. Right? I'm looking right now. But actually that was a big part of my trip here, other than bringing the French Bulldog down, was to see the different bloodlines that they had here. I wanted I like to dive deep into a breed when I'm diving in. I like to get to know everything about that breed, the different bloodlines, that kind of stuff. And then I know what I'm looking for in terms of my specialty, and what I like is personal protection. Right, but something that could still be a family dog is not going to be batshit crazy, right? I'm not looking to go to war in Iraq, right?
A lot of police dogs are family dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
If they're trained, raised correctly, and selected properly,
a good stable temperament.
Dogs, yes,
you know,
they go to work, and then when they come home, they play with the kids.
I found that with Force, he was very stable. He was very stable, especially given the amount of stimulation we put him through. And, you know, especially as I came in as the wild card, like I pushed him a little bit to see what he would have done if he would have redirected on you, that kind of stuff. And, I mean, he held his own well.
Yeah. Especially towards the end when you were...
Yeah, and then, even you were surprised because you were like, oh, if you put your hand on him... And I was like,
I was expecting him to want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, like,
and you could tell the ears went up and he tilted the head and he's like, all right, you're going a little far there.
He was thinking.
Right? But he stayed.
Yeah. And
I'm like, I'm so proud.
I mean, you put the work in. At the end of the day, the proof, I always say the proof is in the pudding. And the dog directly takes leadership from the handler. Yeah. That's why we call the leash.
If I had dropped the leash and tell him go, he would have gone.
Yeah. Yeah, for shit show. For shit show, he was biting me. He was waiting on it, right?
It's just because I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
He was like, come, say it.
Yeah,
say
he was
it,
like,
say it.
He's like, what?
Say it.
Yeah, he was trying to feel out the situation too, right?
Yeah.
Because in the beginning, we were switching him off. We were switching him on, right? So sometimes he was kind of conflicted. Then this was the first time he was, he had to work with two different decoys, right? And then have to work with two different decoys and then switching between decoys based on targeting. So it was a lot of stim that he went through, you know, and to finish strong like that, that's why when, I don't know if you remember Alan in the end, he was like, hey, you think we should give him another bite? And I was like, nah, he did so well on the end. Let's let's end with that win and let's end on that high note where we literally had no corrections to make. So let's just end on that.
Yeah, because I didn't have to correct him.
Yeah.
at all.
Yes, it was a nice loose leash. You know, so yeah, like, big up the breeder. I will check you guys out too.
One head, one guard kennels.
Yeah. Right. We breed French bulldogs in Toronto. A lot of people.
I'm training some Frenchies right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're nice dogs. I was not a small dog person. Honestly, I was not a small dog person. I only known working dogs my entire life. My wife as well. She likes working dogs.
Okay.
When we got into Frenchies, I was pleasantly surprised that it was like having that bulldog pit bull, same kind of drive. They would still catch rabbits in the yard. They would still have that gaminess and stuff, but very easy to train, super easy to train. Once you work them, once you give them something to do, at least every being, every mammal, I would say, it needs exercise.
Yeah.
Right. To feel that fulfillment, right. But once you gave them that exercise and a good solid nutrition, it was so easy, but without the aggression. Mm-hmm. I could trust that. The Frenchies.
And then some of them as adults, they go through all that high drive phase where they do everything,
mm-hmm.
learn everything, and then they become adults. And then you say, okay, let's go and work. And he looks up.
It's like, yeah.
What shit? Yeah. I'm here sleeping.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Right?
And I like that about them, though. It could be so chill.
Become a little bit the couch potato.
Yeah. That's the bulldog in them, too. Huh?
And then the owner got a female puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working with the puppy. And he's on the couch looking at us like, no, this shit is just wrong. I should be getting some of those treats.
Yeah.
And then he wants to join the training all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Right?
And then they're very family-oriented dogs. Huh?
You tell her down and then he lies down next to her.
Pack learning.
Yeah.
Pack learning. Yeah, I mean, there's a big thing right now too. Like, a lot of people are spreading this misconception in terms of like the colors, right? Now, I agree. If that person is not testing properly, you could run into problems. You'll run into I've seen something where the puppies have like a huge amount of water retention. They're just like puffy. They come out just water filled.
Wow.
Yeah. They literally pass away. The whole litter kind of passes away. Blindness, deafness. Like, for instance, if you have a recessive male with a visual or even another recessive male, you could have, a lot of health problems there.
Right.
But I think once you do your due diligence, right, on everything, you check your check boxes, right, then now you're actually adding to the breed, right? You're adding to the breed. Because let's be real, they are going to always have people who want French bulldogs, me included, right? Like, I didn't like them before, but now I love them, you know?
There's now some breeders that breed them with the nose a little longer again.
Yeah, you call that big rope, right?
And I agree with that.
But so... The one that you're talking about in terms of length, not the muzzle.
Yes.
Yeah, so they I agree
can
with
breathe,
that too.
So they can breathe correct. Better.
Right?
You know?
Because
it has gotten to a point where, you know, they have trouble living.
Yes, correct. Right? Because it's a very lab-grown dog.
Yeah.
Right? Lengthening out the muzzle, yes, I'm very much into that as well. We choose dogs, first of all, we look at the nose to see, is there any stenosis? Right? And then I want, the muzzle is a cooling system of the dog.
Yep.
That's the radiator of the dog. So we look for a good cooling system. And we also test, before we even breed dogs, we test them. How are you in plus 32, plus 35? And you know from seeing me work with even Force, I'm all about the data. Mm-hmm. I'll put on a timer. I'll say, okay, this is how long we worked for. This is how long we rest for. This is how long... how much break we get in, we break it up into sets, and we literally try to take that data now and then move forward. Okay, how could we get Force to perform better next week? So I'm very much a data guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do with the Frenchies. Okay, so we're checking to see, is this dog making a cut? Yes, if it does, okay, cool. This dog is good to breed. If it's not making a cut, then no. Then you're taken away from the breed, right? But as you're saying, when you mentioned the bigger nose, there's a new type of Frenchie that they're pushing called the big rope. And it's horrible. It's horrible. Let me see if I could freaking Google this shit for you. Right? The big rope. But they're way more expensive. Yeah, Google big rope Frenchie. Right? Yeah, look at the muzzle now. It's like,
yeah.
So it's a way more skin, way more, a lot more fat around the face. So now they're selectively breeding them to be like,
yeah, I don't want a dog that is fatter.
Look
I
at just, that.
I would
and just this, want, they, people are paying big money for this.
You want a dog that can breathe.
Correct. Right. So for us, we want our dogs to be able to go on a plane with you. Right. The big bro. Yeah. Big bro Frenchie. Oh my, yeah. It's horrible. But you see,
looks like a Neapolitan Mastiff in Frenchie's
A miniature Neapolitan. And yeah, the Neos don't live
all,
very
all those
long.
Folds will trap bacteria. And
correct. Like, for instance, everybody knows if you're a bulldog going out there and you know, have experience with them, you know, especially if you're living in a warmer climate, it's a little less when you're in the cold, but in a warmer climate, daily you better clean those folds.
Yeah,
daily you have to spread it out.
Go, you have to walk with a box of wipes.
Yeah, it's crazy because, and they get infected so easy, you know.
Like, I have a few customers that have English bulldogs, so
yeah. That's a breed that, yeah, it's a rough one. That's a rough one too. You know, a real rough one. But you know, like, again, you're seeing some good breeders coming out there with some good quality dogs. You know, yes, you might have, I always tell people, yes, you might have to pay a little more in the beginning. But when you look at how many years you're going to get off the dog,
you will save multiple fold that in vet bills.
Correct. In vet bills and heartache, you know. For me, like, I bond with my dogs more than humans, right? Like, a human could die, I might be like, oh, shit, they died, right? But if a dog died, I'll be like, oh, like, I'm heartbroken, right? I can't speak.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, like, for me, I bond super strong with my animals, and I know there's a lot of other people out there who bond like that. And it's the worst thing that your dog is dying 3 years old, 4 years old. And, again, it might not necessarily be the diet, because we have experience with clients who fed their dog raw, right? The entire life of the dog, it has eaten like the best, and they're dying at 4 years old, right? Meanwhile, big up the potongs and them out there. Meanwhile, the potongs and them living 17 years on just trash, right?
I had a female pit bull that was 16.
Yeah, well, so that's my favorite breed. Big up the pit bulls and it too. The pit bulls, I that's my favorite breed. My favorite breed has to be the pit bull. They're just such capable dogs, and I find that they have such a bad name, you know, for such a good, capable dog. And if trained well, they are such an asset, because they could do everything. They could hunt. They could do protection. They're good with kids, right? They have a higher pain tolerance. When those kids grab them, they jump on them, have a way higher pain tolerance.
Grab the ear, pull the tail.
And for the most part too, I like Rotties for that too. For their that kind of gentle disposition that they could have once trained. Because, like, for instance,
and my once familiar with you.
Yes. Right? For, like, for instance, my grandparents, like, as I said, they always had Rotties. But just like a lot of South people out there, we, like, training wasn't a thing. Like, even only when I was an adult, or when, like, maybe my teens, there wasn't, like, internet and stuff. It was now jumping out there. The first book that really taught me a lot was The Complete Dog Book. It's a hard red cover book, and it had a lot of information in there about little training and diseases. And but they never really believed in training a dog. It was like, well, the dog know what it knows. We don't create dogs. We don't use leash.
When I was growing up, as you say,
mm-hmm.
the beginnings, right? There is the Koehler method.
Yeah. Koehler method, yeah.
Then you had...
But that Koehler method was rough. Yeah, if anybody did research on
I was
Koehler
born in 1970, yeah. Right? And I started working with dogs from age 7.
Yeah.
So
heavy compulsion.
The Koehler method. Then you had Konrad Most.
Right.
You know, the Schutzhund. Mm-hmm. And I still have that book.
I mean, let me tell you.
That is... You know, if you read that and what you're supposed to be doing,
yeah,
according to this book, and you apply that to today's times.
No, yeah, you'd be in prison.
You'll feel like a Neanderthal.
Yeah, you'd be in prison. Right? I mean, science has changed. There is some little good. There is some good takeaways from, you know.
And it keeps changing, and that is what some of the force free people don't get, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up in the '70s, so we had compulsion training.
Right.
Then with the TV series Flipper,
right,
came the clicker training,
right,
because they did that with the dolphins,
yeah,
and call it positive reinforcement training and all that. And I've always said, so I don't know how positive it is to take an animal out of the wild, stuff it in a tank, starve it for a few days, mm-hmm, and then reward certain behaviors with a herring. There's not much force-free in that, right?
Yeah, they call that splitting hairs, right? They'll split hairs on things that they like. And then they'll be like, oh, no, you see that? That's abusive. That's abuse.
Right?
You know, so...
But having a killer whale in a tank.
I know.
That, you know.
People paying money to go. People paying money to go, so you can't blame them. You know?
Right? So that is not exactly force-free, right?
Yeah.
And so I have... Luckily for me, I would say, I grew up with the first one. Right. In compulsion.
Yeah.
And then came about...
While you're on that topic...
The other end of it...
How was it for you...
And I have learned...
Coming out of that... Like when... Growing up in that... heavy compulsion, and then now you're seeing like the science changing.
Well, the thing is, for me, it's coming out of the compulsion era and then seeing the clicker training. And I was a teenager...
Right.
At the right time, mm-hmm, where I realized... Either one in isolation is not very good.
Correct.
But if you take the best out of each, mm-hmm, and throw it together,
yeah,
you have a pretty decent system.
Yeah.
And I have worked with that system for a long time until then training methods changed again, mm-hmm, where you use a lot of prey drive, mm-hmm, for reward instead of food.
Yeah.
Right?
And how do you find as we're on that... How do you find working the dog in prey versus food has worked out for you? Now, I know it depends on the dog.
It depends not just on the dog. It depends on the breed.
Yeah.
And it depends on the climate you're in.
Right.
So if I want to produce speed, mm-hmm, I will use the toy. Mm-hmm. If I have to do a lot of repetition, I will use the food because, mm-hmm, it slows down the dog. Mm-hmm. And I can do it multiple times without tiring out the dog.
Yeah.
So we live in a hot climate. If I want to do something repetitively, if I use the toy, there's either a fight with the game of tug.
Yeah.
Or I throw a ball or I throw the tug.
Right.
But it involves the dog going after it and I have to call back the dog. Yeah. And so we're spending minutes just doing one rep.
Yeah, breaking, and only that, breaking the flow.
Right. So versus food, with food, I can do 10, 20 reps, mm-hmm, in the space of less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So the dog is not running hot. The dog is not full, right? Because I would make that food part of the meal.
Yeah.
Right?
As you're on that topic, I think that's another big pointer that we give to our clients is not wasting that food time, right? Like... So another easy way of getting in those reps is the same food you had to feed the dog anyway.
Yep.
Today, let's just say you weren't working to be competing in obedience. You just wanted some basic pet obedience. Mm-hmm. Use that 3 to 5 minutes of instead of feeding your dog in the bowl, and it doesn't matter if you're feeding kibble, if you're feeding raw, whatever. Right? But... use that time, that 5 minutes. Oh gosh, 5 minutes, right? And give the dog a couple reps or some things, or downs, or sits.
You can even do a whole healing pattern.
Yeah,
I put out a video not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. Check this man's Instagram, please.
With Force's aunt,
right?
His father's sister,
right?
Where I'm doing a healing pattern with the food bowl in my hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's in the heel.
Yeah.
And we're talking focused heel, right? Mm-hmm.
She's like, yeah, we used to do that too.
I have the food bowl here. She makes eye. She doesn't look at the bowl. She makes eye contact.
Yeah.
And I'm going down the driveway, come back up.
Work for your food.
And then she sits, and I wait a few seconds, and I look straight ahead, and she's still looking at me.
Correct.
And then, yes. And then put down the food bowl.
Correct. I mean.
Do that once on a morning.
Yeah, and once an evening, and you're good to go.
Oftentimes, I'm doing the same with force.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to go and work and get money, right? Your dog shouldn't just be being rewarded that free meal for no work. Right?
No, you have to do something.
You have to do something for me for this. And I think that's the biggest problem. You know, like we over spoil our dogs. People are just spoiling their dogs. Right?
Well, I don't think anybody spoils their dog more than me.
Yeah.
Right? But it is conditional.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have the world for me, but you have to do something first.
Yeah. It's a transaction.
So, yes. So with Ninja, with my shepherd, right? My narcotics dog.
Mm-hmm.
He had very good focus.
Right.
And I selected him because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the whole litter, I had a pick of the litter.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the chaos of all the puppies, right? Smack in the middle, there's this one dog just staring at me.
Yeah.
That is the one I selected.
Yeah.
And with him, with food time, I would put the bowl down on the ground, have him in a sit, and he has to look at me.
Mm-hmm.
Uninterrupted eye contact. And I started off with a second, 2 seconds. And during the course of 6 months to a year,
yeah,
I had him at a minute.
Yeah.
But that meant if he looks away and looks at the food at 55 seconds, I would start over.
Yeah.
So sometimes feeding him was not 5 minutes. Feeding him was 20 minutes, half an hour.
I had my English Bull Terrier, I used to do that too.
But what it did is that anytime he wanted something, anytime he wasn't sure about something, eye contact.
Give me.
The world can come crumble around him. He makes eye contact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Check in with me face.
Yes.
You know? Shit at the fan, check in.
He sleeps on a pillow in the bedroom and you just turn around in your bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and he will look up and stare at you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, we're going to work.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to work? No, go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good stuff.
You know.
That's good stuff, man.
And Force does the same now.
Yeah.
He escorts me to the washroom.
Yeah.
And then coming back, he's hoping that he gets to go on the bed. No, go on your pillow.
Yeah.
You know, and then he goes on his pillow and I fall asleep. And then when I'm sleeping, he sneaks up on the bed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see...
Naughty boy.
You see this look of, shit, you caught me, right? So when I wake up and he's on the bed and I look at him, you know when just the tip of the tail wags, not the whole tail?
Yeah, That's the shit you caught me, didn't I?
You caught me.
Yeah.
And he just flows off the bed and puts himself on the pillow.
Yeah, he melts. They melt.
Don't even have to say anything. You just look at him.
Yeah, just melt on the bed.
And I love those things.
Yeah.
Could I be, you know, quote unquote, the trainer and buff him for it? And yes, I could. Do I want to? No.
Yeah.
It is those little things that I just love about him.
Yeah.
That he tries.
Yeah.
He knows he's not supposed to, but he tries somehow.
Yeah, each one of us.
You know? But when he gets caught, he also knows to do the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why, you know, I'm a little lenient with that. Other things, of course not, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain things, if I say no, is no.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care what you think about it.
And I mean,
it.
That's a good balance.
Right?
No, it's just, no. I mean, it's like being a parent. Huh? You are being your dog parent, you know? Right? Your dog parent.
If I say no in German, a little louder.
Yeah.
He hits the brakes.
Yeah.
You know, because he knows it's not wise to go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what he learned. So if I take a dog like him, can you imagine Force in the hands of a force free trainer?
Nah. He would kill somebody. Definitely from what I've seen, he would kill somebody.
That would be a total different kettle of fish.
Yeah. He would literally kill somebody, I think.
Yeah,
because he's already a confident dog,
and he's a fairly dominant dog.
So if you just told me yes my whole life, I would see Force. He would not make it this far. I don't think he'd make it this far. By like 1 year old, he's biting somebody for shit. Sure, he bites in somebody.
Yeah, he bit me.
Oh, you see, so
this because of COVID, mm-hmm. we didn't get to socialize him the way we wanted to, and so we were up on the training field in the club.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have a go at a shepherd.
And
I corrected him for it. And his first reaction was to redirect.
Yeah. How bad was it?
No, I was lucky enough that I was wearing a training vest and it had a ball in your pocket. Yeah. So when he tried to bite your hip, is the ball he caught.
Yeah.
So the pressure went down on the ball instead of me. So I was okay.
Yeah.
But him and I had it out right after, seconds after.
I mean,
and I got a side submission.
Yeah.
And since then we're friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, since then we're friends.
As Carlos Ramirez says, a lot of situations that we get ourselves into with our dogs is a great learning experience, right? For both the dog and the handler, right? And again, it's part of the relationship. Like, no relationship is us holding hands in the beginning. No relationship, right? You're going to have sometimes when you you have it out for the person, right? Could be a friend, could be a wife, could be a dog. It's a relationship, right? So it's not going to be perfect and you need to have boundaries. Yep. Right,
but you also have to understand the animal that you're working with.
Correct,
right?
Correct.
So we had our issues resolved, mm-hmm. and he trusts me, right? But he is a fairly dominant dog, and touch is a form of domination. Mm-hmm. He does not allow anybody outside of this household to touch him. Mm-hmm.
But then that could also be a socialization thing from, you know, that nice period.
I took him to vets. I took him to vet techs mm-hmm. on the table and all of that. They got a new employee that walked through the door and he was a little puppy. He was 5 months old.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Serious.
Immediately.
Naughty boy force.
As that person came into Naughty. The room, didn't even try to touch him. Just came in the room and said, it's a new puppy. And started growling immediately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's not.
I mean, you get dogs like that, huh?
At the vet, they listen to the heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I'm so where you want me to put it.
Yeah.
Because they can't put it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can park him next to the vet. And he will not interfere with her.
But just don't touch, man.
Just don't touch
him. Don't touch, man.
I can walk him through a crowd of 30 people. Doesn't care. He'll not interfere with anybody. Just don't touch him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. When we finish with this podcast, I'm going to show you a picture of us attempting to microchip him.
Okay.
It's interesting.
I like to see that.
At the end, I did it by myself.
Yeah.
With no
issue. Stuck him.
With no issue.
Well, I mean, I guess first taught you how to be a.
You know.
How to be a.
No, I learned how to do it before. But if you know the dog, you know how to deal with it. Because force, that's why it's his name, right?
Yeah.
If you come at him with force,
yeah,
he'll meet you every step of the way.
Yeah.
He will escalate with you.
And I find you get that a lot with the male rotties.
Yeah, they're pushy.
The male rotties.
But even among male rotties, and I've had rotties before, and I had male rotties before.
He's pushy.
He is by far the most pushy that I owned.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I understand one of his sisters is just like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different. She stayed with the breeder.
Yeah.
And he told me, yeah, she's like that too.
Yeah.
The others are more social. But those two, not so much.
Yeah. That could be a genetic thing too. Could be a genetic thing.
And I love him.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I love him for that.
Yeah.
I love him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Because you know you're safe too. You know you can rely on him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say. You know you're safe too.
I spent he's a little over 3 years old. I spent 3 years trying to find something that scares him and I've come up empty. There's nothing that scares him. Mm-hmm. You can crack that whip right next to him and he will watch you straight in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. he was a very stoic
I took
dog
him to a shooting range. We are 25 feet away from two people shooting AR-15s.
Yeah.
And he's lying on the ground chewing on a water bottle like they don't exist.
Yeah. That's good news. Good solid news.
Right? He doesn't care. I have video of it. He just chews on the bottle, you hear the gunshots, and he's like, yeah, da 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 da. He doesn't bother him in the least.
Mm-hmm.
As it shouldn't, according to the breed standard.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a CTP with a Rottweiler, they have to pass a single gunshot on leash and two gunshots while jogging without looking in the direction of the shot.
Yeah, it's hard to find those.
Right? That is what he breathes, Thunder says. And that is that is what you know. And where Aaron gets his, that is one guard, where he gets his dogs from.
Yeah.
They do that. They do these CTPs and all that.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron, where's Aaron based again?
Pitti Valley.
Pitti Valley. Okay.
Right? Okay. And, yeah. So when people, you know, see the price, but I know what you're getting.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, you get nerves of steel and high drive.
Well, it's like way up. It's
your I have his aunt, right? Elena. Elena is a mall in a Rottweiler body.
Yeah. Cracked up.
If you can't walk in the yard without almost falling over the dog because he's constantly in front of you, trying to engage you into something.
Yeah.
I can't leave a toy out with her because she drives herself. Mm-hmm. She takes a Kong, flings it in the air.
I have a dog like that.
And then chases it.
Yeah.
Right? She does it at lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's panting frantically, lying down behind my gym equipment in the shade.
Yeah.
And the moment she cools off a little bit, she picks up the Kong and does it all over again.
Yeah.
She'll give herself a heat stroke.
Yeah.
You can't leave a toy with her.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good dog.
That toy has to come with you as the handler. You have to monitor her.
Yeah. But that's good. That's good drive. Because now when you channel that, it'll be crazy. It'll be crazy good drive. You'll get a lot out of a dog like that, you know?
Yeah. She's super. I mean, you know? And then the little shepherd that I have, she's like that too.
Mm-hmm. All of them in here?
Two of them are in
there. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, so, but that is, again, if I picture my dogs with anybody in the force-free community, somebody is going to get hurt.
Yeah, same with my dog.
Somebody's going to get hurt. And I don't care how much they tell me, oh, we dealt with aggressive dog. No. You have not dealt with a truly aggressive dog.
No.
You have
dealt
with a fair aggressive dog.
Lying.
Right? Maybe.
Yeah.
A dog that had...
Yeah. A dog
had kennel aggression or barrier aggression, maybe.
But
a
strict, straight up, full on dominant dog.
I'm gonna fuck you up kind of dog. Yeah. They have not dealt with.
Yeah.
I've dealt with two Kangal puppies that almost killed me at age 7 months.
Yeah. No, right? they're bad. The Kangals and them, people that sleep on them, they're good dogs. But again, they're good for. What they were bred for. What livestock bred for. Protection. Yeah,
they don't do well in an urban environment.
No.
Right?
No. Like the first one I ever trained was in, again, downtown Toronto. And it was really hard to train that dog.
Yes.
It was really hard to train the dog because it came. It was like 7-8 months. That dog would eat. The owner was feeding kibble. That dog would eat 8 cups a day. Kibble. 8 cups. I would feed that dog in like a bowl and mix meat in.
I was living in Greece at the time and a diplomat living in Istanbul, which is a 3-hour drive, wanted me to train his two puppies.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, he has two puppies. And he said, well, what type of dog is it? And I have never heard about a Kangal before. So he told me they're Kangal. So when I drove across to Istanbul, before I met him, a friend of mine breeds dogs. So I went to him and he said, let me introduce you to somebody. So he had me meet this old guy and he translated for me, who originated from an area where they breed them between Turkey and Iraq.
Right.
And the advice he had for me is train them before they're 6 months.
Yeah.
I said, what happens after 6 months? They will try to kill you.
Yeah.
And I was early 20s, right?
Yeah.
I felt invincible. I said, yeah, he's talking shit, right?
Yeah.
So I reach Istanbul, I meet my clients, and I start, he's bringing out the first dog, and I try to teach his dog a sit. You know, food by the nose, raise it up.
Yeah.
The dog wasn't going for it, so I'm trying to touch the butt a little bit. And this dog walked up the leash.
Yeah.
Trying to get at me.
Yeah.
And they're so long, so they reach high up.
And they have a long muzzle too, huh?
I'm standing there, you know, keeping the dog at bay, and I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck is going on there?
And they could take the German too, huh?
Yeah, and they take endless pressure.
And they're stubborn. They're stubborn.
Take endless
dogs.
Pressure. And it's like...
Of all the shepherds, they're the most stubborn. Like, you know?
I got the job done.
Yeah.
With the two of them, right? But it took some doing. And it was an eye-opener for me. So, okay, you're not as invincible as you thought you was, and there's dogs out there that will surprise you.
Yeah, boy.
Right? I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Right? By almost losing limbs.
Yeah.
So when I hear people talk about, oh, I want a mastiff, and they have no handling skills, but I want a mastiff. And
yeah. It's like a Bora Boyle. I see that's a thing now in Trinidad.
You are insane.
Bora Boyles. A lot of people into that in Trinidad.
Yeah,
now,
and I trained
a few
of those, right?
Yeah.
And I met good ones and I met asshole ones.
Yeah.
And the asshole ones, you have to be on your toes.
Yeah.
And a client called me, he has a shepherd he wants me to train.
Mm-hmm.
I come to the house, it's a Caucasian he has.
Oh, shit.
I say, right, put that puppy back in the kennel. This training session is going to be an hour-long lecture.
Yeah.
And I told them what they have.
Yeah.
And what's most likely going to happen.
Yeah.
So after that, the entire family was present in every training session.
Mm-hmm.
And I made everybody handle the dog.
Yeah.
Every session. The only time when somebody wasn't there is when they were out of the country.
Yeah.
And so it went well for them.
Yeah.
But they had to raise their fencing twice.
Yeah.
Because they had a school next door.
Yeah, those dogs will kill.
They had a school next door. So they had to raise the wall.
Yeah.
They had to change their gate. They spent endless money just fortifying the premises to keep this thing in. Because he was brutal. You know, that dog was very loving with the family, right? Even with me. But anything outside, anything that doesn't live there was the enemy number one.
Yeah.
Very aggressive too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So those dogs, I can't see any of those guys, you know, that only talk about training. And then my favorite, science says.
Science says.
Yeah. Science has proven.
I find you get a lot of science says from the people who only have owned like one dog. Right? Two dogs.
Yeah.
Right? You're now getting into the dogs and you're saying science says.
Yeah.
You know, right? And this comes from a man that knew. I knew in the game. Right? And I mean, you know.
So you had maybe five dogs and you may have trained 50 or 100.
Mm-hmm.
There are those of us that had thousands of dogs passing through them.
Yeah.
Over a lifetime.
Yeah.
In my case, it's 4 decades. There are dogs that you will not be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe they can handle anything just because of science, right? And when you look at the science, most of it was anecdotal surveys that are touted as science. And the few actual studies that are mentioned there are studies that started with a bias.
Mm-hmm. Skewed.
Yes, of course. And some of them, they're actually omitted in the follow-up. So when they took dogs that had a problem.
Yeah.
And then they trained it with their method.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 months later, follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
How is the dog now?
Yeah.
Out of the, I think it was 6 dogs, that they did
six of them fail.
Out of the 6 dogs,
7 fail.
3 returned to baseline,
right?
Meaning they did the same thing that they did before,
just back to
The moment training stopped, they went right back.
Mm-hmm.
3 they omitted from the follow up
because they must have been worse
because they got worse,
yeah.
Right? So that is the kind of science they're talking about. And then if you look at learning and the 4 quadrants, choosing only one cannot work.
Correct.
And science says, but only what you pick and choose, it says.
Yeah.
Because science also said that corrections work.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it can't be too much to one side, that
they are never necessary.
Yeah.
Okay, let me hand you Force's leash and you show me how it's never necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just walk him. Just walk him around the block.
Yeah.
Right?
Just see him.
And when
see him
when
next
your neighbor up the road dog comes out the gate because
give him some food,
right? Then I give you food. I give you
give him some
a
food.
Pouch
give
full
him some
of food
bacon
and a leash, right? On a flat collar.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because you can't use a front collar
and you
it's
can't
true.
Use a slip lead, right?
It's true.
And
you can't
show
use any
me
tools.
And you show me your method.
It's true.
So nobody true. Will pick up that challenge
no.
because they know they're either going to get mauled.
They'll only choose the...
They get mauled, they get pulled down.
Yeah.
They get embarrassed.
I think that's the next thing. The first three people, they usually choose, they pick and choose their cases, right? So like, oh, I could fix, I'll try, I could fix this as a sausage. Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know? So, skewed.
Of course. Skewed. And you have, they never show their work.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
You never see a video with them actually working. Yes. You only see videos with them talking about work.
Guys, beware of trainers and breeders that post only pictures. That's a problem. Pictures alone, then you can't see the pudding, and you need to see what's inside that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a big red flag.
And it's a huge marketing machine that they, you know, put up.
Yeah.
And of course, because you can't use any of the normal training tools, mm-hmm. then we can, but we can sell you the no-pull harness and we can sell you the Halti.
Yeah. Which kind of, for some dogs, it could be actually more detrimental for their,
yes,
for their physical health.
I can show you, if I let out force and I pick up the prong collar, he will attempt to stick his head through it.
Yeah.
I have to open it up to put it on. But as far as he's concerned, that takes too long.
Yeah.
He wants to stick his head because he knows that he's going training.
Yeah.
Right?
You're going to work.
And he gets excited.
Exactly.
It's the same if I put the e-collar on him.
Yeah. It's like, right? It's like slat mill. Some people will say, see, it's like, that's abuse. So then you're trying to tell me that if you, more than likely, that person isn't going on a treadmill. That the same person who has a problem with a slat mill is not going to the gym for shit show. You're sitting on your couch and you're speaking.
Yeah, the dog controls the speed.
Right? Controls the speed. Plus, you have brakes.
Yes.
So for me, sometimes if I find my dog is driving too hard, I might slow them down. Say, oh, you know what? Because we might be on set 5. I'm checking the time. I'm checking how hard you're pushing it.
And then you get a dog like Force's brother, Frank, mm-hmm. who overrides the brakes.
Yeah. Just over pushing the brakes.
You can pull the brakes all the way.
Yeah.
And he's still moving it.
Yeah. High drive.
Yeah. You'll meet him.
Yeah. I think he's coming today. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you going down there too?
No, I'm coming with Force.
Okay. Yeah. I think this was...
Right? But, yeah, he's a strong dog.
Yeah.
He's a very strong dog. Very powerful. And he's bigger than Force.
Yeah.
He's wider, taller.
Take a look today. I'm excited to see. I'm really excited. I have to say, this trip with Rottweilers has...
He's a little machine.
Yeah.
But it's more social than Force.
Yeah.
More social.
Yeah. Yeah. Has that switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some dogs have it, you know. Most dogs have it, you know. But for some dogs, like in Force's case, he gets emotional sometimes. Yeah. You know? He's like... He'll start to get angry. Play the game I want to play. Oh, that's it.
Yeah. He wants to.
Yeah.
Even when you reward him with the tug.
Yeah.
If you throw the tug, he'll pick it up and run around with it and shake it.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Mm-hmm. But give him a game of tug and you see it stepping up 5 notches.
Yeah.
He loves the fight.
Yeah, yeah. And usually you'll find the dogs that love the fight like that. Are the dogs that if you put too much pressure on them when we're doing like protection, mm-hmm. for instance, and you put too much pressure and they find it was unfair, they'll redirect. No. Usually the dogs that like you could tell, make that correlation from now on. The dogs that like to fight in the tug, when you're trying to make a correction or they thought at that moment, hey, you were being unfair, they're redirecting. Right? Because they have no problem with the fight.
Yeah. Right? They're comfortable in doing that.
They're comfortable with it, yeah. You know? So.
Sometimes, there was one time I played midi tug with him. And did the tug of war. And he shook his head so hard that the strap
the knuckle.
From the handle. No, it peeled off the skin.
Yeah. I got that shit.
On my finger.
I got that shit already.
Just shifted it.
Yeah.
It was still there. It is not in the right place.
Rough. Right? Rough.
But I want to encourage you. She sent me this, right? Nicola Ferguson.
Right.
She is a trainer in the UK.
Right.
She trains service dogs.
Yeah.
And she competes in IGP with her Rottweiler.
Okay.
She has two Rottweiler females that she's training in IGP. And she was studying to become a vet. Mm-hmm. And the prohibitive cost of the studies, because of COVID, brought that to an end. But she's writing about the force-free dilemma, which is the title of her book, which I can highly recommend.
Yeah,
because she picks apart almost all the arguments in a very common sense way.
Yeah,
and very clinical.
Right.
You know, and with a touch of humor.
Yeah,
she's very witty in her writing. Yeah. I haven't finished the book yet.
Yeah,
but I'm impressed. I must say.
Okay.
I'm impressed.
Okay.
I like it. I really like it. So guys, check it out. The Force-Free Dilemma by Nicola
Ferguson. Is it available on Amazon?
Yes.
Okay, guys, you heard that. It's available on Amazon.
I want to give her a plug there.
Yeah, make Sean plug her. And any other plugs you have to put in, boy? Any other plugs? Well, I know we have training for 8 o'clock, right? And we are trainees, so let me not be too late. But yeah, we thanks for having me, guys. Right, I appreciate it.
Before you go, there's one quick subject.
I'm here. Bring it out. Bring out our subject. Then
with the force free.
Right.
I hate the way they're medicating dogs.
Oh my gosh. Well.
I knew. Well, I knew it gonna hit.
Right. I'm from Canada. Right, and that is the people are big on insurance there, like pet insurance and stuff, and that is a big deal. You know, like I've trained dogs that have been heavily medicated. It's just like ADHD for humans. Like, so you'll have that's people who might get, for instance, a high drive dog, right? And they would have, more than likely, the vet would have said, neuter the dog is gonna make that dog. All of a sudden, your dog will not sit and down and all that shit once you neuter the dog. As soon as his balls is gone, he's just going to be amazing and be able to do IGP and shit, right? And I'm seeing, it's a big thing now where, you know, people are like, my dog is, you know, they're medicated. And they're paying their money. That's the thing, huh? People are paying their friggin' money for this, right? But again, I think it's coming from a place of ignorance. And it's just about, because I've dealt with clients like that, right? And you would be surprised, like they really did to the bottom of their heart think that they were doing the best for their dog.
Yeah, you know? I don't blame them. I blame the trainers that push them in that direction.
That's what I'm going to say now.
Right? That is my issue.
Trainers, and again, I told you about that, I think last time we spoke, about there's dog psychologists that you sit in the waiting room, and the psychologist is going to go in the back and have a conversation with your dog for about an hour. And, you know, that is when it comes out, they're going to tell you all about the dog's problems. Right. And it is the trainers and the people who are pushing this crazy nonsense that is given, I think, all of us a bad name. Yeah. You know, all of us.
I believe that it's a bit of a, those trainers trying to save face. They couldn't deal with the issue that the dog came with.
Yeah.
With their methods that they're propagating. And so, because the dog is beyond their methods, something is wrong with the dog.
And then, as we're on that subject.
Take him to the vet to get medicated.
So that's what I was not going to say too. We have to also blame the force-free vets, because they're the ones who are actually, when you go to the vet now, off the bat, when you go to the vet now in Canada, by the time your dog gets the rabies shot, which is usually around 4-5 months old, you know, we should neuter this dog next month because he's going to get cancer and die. Right?
Yeah.
He's going to die next 3 months if you don't neuter him now. Right? And it's a real thing. And now they're fear-mongering people to neuter their dog. Like, oh my gosh, Do you think that my dog is? We get that question all the time. You think my dog is gonna get cancer? The vet is telling me this, and so you have to blame those vets too. You have to blame the vets too, you know, because how else do people get medication? Dog trainers aren't able to write prescriptions. So who's writing it? Who's writing it? But then again, as we're on that topic, that's another big deal right now in Canada, because there's a movement, right, where people are just, most people are very disenchanted, and I think even in Trinidad, disenchanted with the vets, because you're getting people, like a lot of the vets, they're on the money grab. So I'm going to neuter this, I'm going to fearmonger you because I know you're going to come and neuter your dog, right? I know if I, and we've spoken to people and they don't talk about this, right? All the vets that know about this, check in and friggin' tell us in the comments, or they have a comment section here? No? Comment on the friggin' Instagram. Or the comments on the Instagram. But on check Instagram. In and let us know if you could do it in an anonymous way. But tell us if that has been an experience, because I know I've spoken to people where, let's just say your dog has a problem. The vet is going to say, you know what, Mark? It's not looking too good. I think we need to keep your dog today. They're going to keep your dog fearmonger you. You're emotional, huh? You're emotional. They're going to fearmonger you. They're going to keep your dog today. You might say, okay, 2 days, right? Keep your dog. Sometimes the dog might die on premises, right? They might call you and say, Mark, I think we need to keep that dog two more days. Your dog is dead, right? But they're just milking you out, right? Racking up that bill. And they know you're going to friggin' pay it, huh? They know you're going to pay it, right? And that's a big deal. All the vets, come on, man. Do better.
That is something that I haven't heard about here yet.
You're getting, trust me, right? People don't trust vets as much anymore. Now, I will say this.
I know they're only neutering thing here because, one, of course, it gets you in the clinic. And two, we have a huge stray dog problem.
Correct. But right? The reason for that is because we have a huge ownership problem.
Yes.
That's why we, how much more do you have? Backyard breeder
problem.
Pardon?
And a huge backyard breeder problem.
Yes.
Because no dog that comes from my Rottweiler breeders kennel will end up in the shelter.
Yeah. Yeah, you vetted those owners
Alan's
before.
None of Alan's dogs will end up in
correct.
The shelter.
Correct. None of my dogs either.
Right? None of my Roger's dogs. None of the Reem's dogs. All those good working dog breeders, their dog's not going to end up in the shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're vetting their clients.
Because people seeking out these dogs for a specific purpose.
Yes. And you know you're not going to sell the dog to just any and everybody. Right?
There's that. Right? And so the fact that anything has to get neutered that walks through the door without taking in consideration that there may be a problem with calcium absorption if it's done too early.
Yes.
Over a lifetime, which then leads to hip dysplasia and ACL problems.
Obesity is a big thing.
Later on in age, right?
Right. Obesity is a huge deal in North America, right? Heart disease, all these
thyroid
kind of
problems.
Thyroid, right? You get a lot of diabetes. You're seeing a lot of diabetes in dogs now.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's said, well, you prevent testicular cancer. Yeah, but you're causing the dog is 3 times more likely to get blood cancer.
Correct. That's why I believe there's a time. There's a time for that. Usually around the 6-year period, 7-year period, if that dog is not a breeding dog, is not being able to use their reproductive system a lot, around 6-7 years, I would definitely, because sometimes if it's too late and the dog does get cancer, at that moment they don't want to operate that late because the dog is so old. But usually around that 6-7 year period, even if it was a breeding dog, you know you're going to retire it soon. You know, if you're neuter at that age, it might be the best bet for a male, you know?
Right.
Like, especially in my experience of dealing with clients, all that stuff, that is the best age. Anytime before that is too early. And sometimes you could push it a little later, but usually anytime after 7 years old is a little bit late, you know? I mean, it's another thing I was talking to somebody about is you don't really see dogs living past 10 to 12 years anymore. You just don't see it, you know? Like, call around anybody you know who's dog man and ask, like, what's the average you're seeing dogs living now? You know, they're not living that. And not, it could also be what we feed in.
Yeah, that has a big role to play.
Right? It could also be what we feed in the dogs, you know? But, for the most part, like, and I could say it's also because of breeding. Like, for instance, the American Rottweiler, the American Doberman, it is predominantly, like, I don't think you could find any working temperament in those now. If anything, it's to the other extreme where the dog is skittish and it's
which makes
nervy.
Them more dangerous.
Yeah, because now freaking skittish.
Because
you're
you have
bite
that
first.
Amount of power and you have weak nerves.
Yeah. You're biting.
Right? You never know when you're gonna get it. Correct. Because you never know when the dog gets spooked sufficiently to get defensive.
Correct.
You know? I rather have a strong nerved dog that doesn't care.
Yeah. Yeah. A confident dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You know? So.
All right.
Well, guys, I'm going to take some bites from Mark's dog now. No big deal. Right? But yeah, we're gonna go and get back to work. Right, Mark, thank you guys for having me here.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Next time I come down, I'll definitely hit you guys up. And we'll definitely be keeping in contact with you guys at Dog Point. You know, so big up the guys at Dog Point. Big up you guys for having me and that kind of stuff, right?
Right, thanks for coming. Jeremy, it was a pleasure having you. And
We didn't talk as much shit as I thought that we would have talked. You know, but next time.
Well, there's always,
I will have
even if you're in Canada, we can do this remotely too. You know?
Correct. So next time, guys, I'll have the shit talk on a million for you. Right? We will get no work done. Zero work. Right? All right, guys. So have a good one.
All right.